Hi, my name's Nick Smith, founder and creator of Part-Time Pilot. Now, after 3 years, five flight instructors, and over $22,000 out of my bank account, I was finally able to achieve my dream and become a private pilot. Now, I have a bachelor's and master's in aerospace engineering and over 10 years experience as a flight test engineer. So if it was that difficult for someone like me, no wonder 8 out of 10 student pilots never end up becoming a pilot. So this is why I created Part-Time Pilot, and this is why I'm creating this podcast. This podcast will be your audio ground school and just another way Part-Time Pilot is making flight training easier and more consumable for you. So with over 300 students and counting that have used our content to pass the FAA private pilot exams, I hope that you can use this podcast to become the next student to do so. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy listening to the Part-Time Pilot Audio Ground School Podcast. Hello, hello, welcome in. My name's Nick. I'm the host of the Audio Ground School Podcast. And in today's episode, we are going to continue on with our checkride prep course content. So really good, helpful episode today. If you wanted to get some practice oral exam questions, we got some of those today around the topic of your pilot qualifications. So we mentioned, you know, when you first start your check ride, you meet the examiner, you probably pay them, and then they're going to say, all right, let's see your qualifications. Make sure that you are qualified, you know, to fly that day and become a private pilot. So that's what we're going to talk about today and what kind of questions you might get. Just boom, right out the bat, start getting some oral exam questions, some oral questions from your examiner around, you know, these situational based scenarios according to your situation and your qualification. So that's going to be what we talk about today. Really good, powerful episode. But I have one announcement that I want to make, and that is it's April 15th. We are at the end of May. We are going to be doing our scholarship, our GoFundMe scholarship. As you know, we do 4 of these a year, but the other ones are $1,000 scholarships that are only for members of our online ground school. This one is for anybody that is flight training in the U.S. So I will send out the applications in a couple weeks, you know, towards the beginning of May for you guys to maybe the first or second week of May for you guys to apply. And then I'm going to select some finalists, and then the finalists are going to create a video submission saying why they deserve the scholarship. And then you guys, all my followers, listeners, everybody are going to vote on the winners. And depending on how much we can raise, that's how many winners we'll have. You know, if we raise our goal of $10,000, then I think I want to do 2 winners, each getting $5,000. So every single thing that we raise in the GoFundMe, which link in the show notes, goes towards the scholarship. I don't take any. That's why I use GoFundMe for the transparency. I started the GoFundMe with a $1,000 donation from Part-Time Pilot, and I have been working tirelessly to find corporate sponsorships. And we have been able to get up to 3,200. And last year we got up to like 5,000 just by you guys sharing the GoFundMe and small donations, like $5, $10 here, $50, $100 from people who had a little extra give. Now, we have yet to have anybody donate, sad face, like that yet. I don't know if it's because I said I'm doing corporate sponsorships this year, but, you know, I'm working real hard. I'm trying to find, you know, as much. None of this is for me. Guys, like, I'm not taking any of this money, so it's all for you guys. So please share this GoFundMe. Even if you can't donate, I really want to get it out there and try and reach our goal of $10,000. So I'm kind of running out of time on there, so please really help me out. GoFundMe, the link is in our show notes. If you can't donate, that's okay, but please share it on your social media, share it with friends, share it with maybe someone that can donate, and be really appreciative. All right, so that's the announcement. Let's get on to today's episode. Are you struggling on your radio calls to ATC? Are you looking for a better way to practice that's not up there in the air in that stressful situation? Well, I want to talk to you guys about something called AR Sim, or Aviation Radio Simulator, by Plain English. It lets you practice talking to ATC through all phases of VFR and IFR flight, from taxi out to takeoff, all at your own pace. There's no simulator setup needed, and it works on any device, mobile or the web. So whether you're a novice or seasoned pro, the guided communication curriculum in trainer mode will elevate your comms proficiency greatly. Download ARSim by Plain English today and check out our show notes where you can get 10% off using a coupon code. It is a great tool and I highly, highly recommend it. All right, so we're in the check ride prep course and we're in section two, verifying aircraft and pilot qualifications. And we're going to kind of focus on lesson one, which is showing and proving your qualifications. So the first thing the examiner is going to do at your check ride is make sure that both you and the aircraft you plan to fly that day are qualified per the FAA standards. For a pilot, just like a driver's license, registration, and insurance is needed to drive a car, similar documents are required to fly, own, or operate an aircraft. Here are the documents you'll need to have and show the examiner on your check ride. Your pilot certificate. If student pilot on solo, you'll also need your logbook with valid solo endorsement. You're going to be a student pilot, right? So what I'm saying there is like if you're soloing, you're going to need that plus an endorsement anytime you fly. Same thing goes for your check ride, right? So you're going to need your student pilot certificate plus the endorsements that you need for your check ride. So your check ride endorsements that you get from your instructor. Then you're going to need to have your medical certificate, and that has to be valid and up to date and current. And then a government photo ID. On top of having the above documentation, a pilot must also be at least 16 years old and be able to read, write, and speak English in order to legally act as pilot in command of an aircraft. That means solo or flight with someone who is not an instructor or PIC. Here's one possible examiner oral exam question that you might get. If you were to be ramp checked by an appropriate FAA personnel and they asked you to show them your documents, what would you need to show them? So, of course, the answer is student pilot certificate and logbook, okay, with proper endorsements, pilot certificate, or your pilot certificate, right? So either your student pilot certificate if you're a student soloing plus the endorsements you need for soloing, or your pilot certificate if you are no longer a student pilot and you're an actual private pilot, your medical certificate, and a valid government photo ID. All right, so your student pilot certificate. As of 2016, student pilot certificates no longer have an expiration. That was a long time ago. For student pilots, it is required that you possess your student pilot certificate, your medical certificate, and a government accepted photo ID, as we talked about. If you are flying solo, you also need your logbook with valid solo endorsements from your instructor. Again, like we mentioned, same thing goes for your check ride. You're going to have student pilot certificate and valid instructor endorsements for the check ride. Possible examiner question, does your student pilot certificate ever expire? That answer would be no. Okay, moving on to the medical certificate. Private and student pilots must hold at least a third class medical certificate. Private and student pilots, right? Third class medical certificate. For pilots under the age of 40, their certificate must be renewed every 60 calendar months. A calendar month means that no matter what day of the month you receive your certificate, it will always count as the last minute of the last day of the month in terms of an expiration. An example would be if you received your medical examination and received your certificate on August 7th, 2018, and you are 29 years old, then the certificate does not expire until September 1st of 2023. For pilots 40 years or older, the certificate must be renewed every 24 calendar months. That is the same as student pilot. So if you're over 40 years old, it's every 24 months. If you're under 40, it's every 60 months. So you have more time if you're under 40. For pilots over the age of 40, it can become a bit annoying to have to go to a specialized doctor every 2 years. Because of this, the FAA has instituted a new system called Basic Med. Not really new anymore, but something that examiners and the FAA written have been testing a lot on. So it's good to know stuff on Basic Med. In the Basic Med method, a pilot can receive just one AME medical examination at the very start of their flight training to receive a third class medical certificate and then maintain currency of that certificate by using the simplified methods of Basic Med. However, a pilot cannot get a Basic Med certificate without at least getting their initial third class medical certificate and examination, and the pilot must have a valid U.S. driver's license to qualify. Then they get to use the simplified methods of the Basic Med system going forward. Those methods are: the pilot may not fly with more than 5 passengers. The aircraft being operated by the pilot must be limited to 6 seats and certified for less than 6,000 pounds. The pilot may not fly above the 18,000 feet MSL. The pilot may not fly faster than 250 knots. The pilot must visit their primary care physician for a comprehensive medical examination, or CME, at least once every 4 years and provide an FAA checklist to be discussed during the visit. Every 4 years in this instance means exactly that. You do not get the buffer of the rest of the month like it was, you know, for the expirations that we talked about just a bit ago. For example, if you received a medical exam on May 28th of 2016, your next exam would be due by May 28th of 2020. The pilot must log each physician visit in their log. Pilot must complete an online training course on aeromedical factors every 24 months. Basic med, what is it, all that stuff. Especially if you are basic med, you can expect to get questions on this. It's good to study up on basic med. One possible examiner question will be, does your medical certificate expire, right? So you would say yes. For me, you know, depending on whether you're, what age you are, if you are less than 40 years old, it expires in 60 calendar months. If you're more than 40 years old, it expires in 24 calendar months. Another one might be, what is a calendar month? For example, what if you got your medical certificate on the 15th of a month? On what day would it expire? So they might give you, I could highly see an examiner doing that and giving you an example and asking you what day it expires. And you would say, a calendar month means that no matter which day of the month I receive my certificate, it will expire on the last second or the last day of that month. So if I got it on the 15th of the month, it would be that it would expire that same month, you know, however, let's say if I'm younger than 40, it would be 24 months later. So 2 years later on that same month, but the last day of the month, it would expire, right? Not the 15th, the last day. All right. So government photo ID, we talked about that. You're going to need that. All pilots must be in physical possession of a government photo ID in order to operate aircraft or have it readily accessible. The photo ID must be either a driver's license, government ID card, U.S. Armed Forces ID card, passport, credential that authorizes unescorted access to security ID display area at an airport regulated under 49 CFR Part 1542, or another form of ID that the administration finds acceptable. Change of address. I want to talk about change of address because it could be something that you get asked about. When you show the examiner your documentation, this is a good time for them to quiz you on the details. One of these questions may be about what to do if you change your address as a certificate holder. If a certificated pilot changes their permanent mailing address, they must notify the FAA Airman Certificate Branch of the new address. The pilot is entitled to exercise the privileges of the pilot certificate for a period of only 30 days after the date of the move. Therefore, if the pilot fails to notify the FAA Airman Certificate Branch of the new address after 30 days of the address change, then the pilot no longer has a valid certificate. So address changes, 30 days, you got to notify the FAA of that change or else it's not valid. So remember that. All right, now I want to talk about enforcement because another thing they might ask you about while you're showing them your documentation. So the enforcement concerning your documentation. In this case, you'll need to know that each person who holds a pilot certificate or a medical certificate shall present it for inspection upon the request of the administrator, the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, or any federal, state, or local law enforcement. So one question you might see is they might say you're going to fly solo as a pilot, as a certificated pilot, and someone comes up and asks you to prove that you are qualified to fly that aircraft. And let's say that person is the owner and manager of a nearby flight school. Are you required to show them your documentation? Well, if it's not the flight school that you're renting the aircraft from, let's say it's your own aircraft, right? Then you do not have to show them your documentation, right? Enforcement can only be done by the administrator, the NTSB, or any federal, state, or local law enforcement officers. So that's in the FARs. And that could be a question that you might get tripped up on or asked about, you know, when you're showing your documentation. They might say, who can enforce this? Or they might give you a scenario like kind of like what I talked about. All right. Next thing I want to talk about is minimum flight experience. In order to receive your endorsement for FAA practical check ride, your instructor has to ensure that you meet a set of minimum flight hours in different types of flight environments. Once again, you and your instructor should have already went through your logbook and verified you meet all the minimum hour requirements prior to your check ride because you're going to upload those hours into IACRA. The total hours and minimum flight hour requirements depend on if your flight school club operates under Part 61 or Part 141. A person who applies for a private pilot certificate with an airplane category and single engine class rating must log at least 40 hours for Part 61. Of at least 20 hours of that time is flight training from and with an authorized flight instructor. This 40 hours can be further broken down into other requirements that include at least 3 hours of cross-country flying, at least 3 hours of night flight, where part of this training includes 100 nautical mile or more night cross-country, with at least 10 takeoffs and landings to a full stop at night at an airport. Then you need at least 3 hours using instruments only, at least 3 hours of practical check ride prep, and those hours must be within 2 preceding calendar months from the month of your check ride. And then at least 10 hours of solo flight, where 5 hours are cross-country solos. And then with a solo cross-country flight of 150 nautical miles or more in total distance, with 3 full-stop landings at 3 separate points, and 1 segment of the flight, a straight-line distance of over 50 nautical miles. So you have to have like 1 long cross-country that meets those criteria of your solo cross-country flight. And then finally, 3 takeoff and landings to full-stop at airport with operating control tower while soloing. Okay, so that's Part 61. Part 141 is just a little bit different. You need a total of 35 hours. Still need 20 of those hours to be with a authorized flight instructor. So what are the differences? Well, the differences here is instead of 10 hours of solo flight, you only need 5 hours of solo flight, where 3 of those are solo cross-country. You still have to have that long cross-country. You still have to have 3 takeoffs and landings at a control tower, but that requirement is a little bit less, and the total hours are a little bit less at a Part 141. All right, so let's talk about currency. This might be, all these things are topics that might be discussed when you're showing your qualifications, right? So they're going to, after they get your documentation, the examiner, they're going to go through your logbook and make sure that matches with the IACRA. And while they're going through your logbook, they may ask you, you know, how many hours are you Part 61? Are you Part 141? What is Part 61? What is Part 141? How many, you know, solo cross country hours do you have to have total? You know, you'd have to answer Part 61. I need 10 total solo flight with 5 hours being solo cross country flight. And here those hours are right there, there, and there in my logbook. You can see that I meet those requirements, blah, 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 right? So the next thing they might ask you about is currency. In order to be PIC of an aircraft as a holder of a private pilot certificate, you must meet the following currency requirement. Day currency to carry passengers. So in order to carry passengers, a private pilot must have logged 3 takeoffs and 3 landings within preceding 90 days. The landings do not have to be to a full stop. And this applies to each aircraft category, class, and type. In other words, if you get current in a Cessna 172 for passengers, you are not current in a Piper Cherokee. For tailwheel aircraft, the 3 takeoffs and landings must be to a full stop. Then for night currency to carry passengers, you have to have 3 takeoffs and landings to a full stop from the time between 1 hour after sunset and 1 hour before sunrise. These 3 takeoffs and landings must take place in the preceding 90 days, and these 3 takeoffs and landings must be in the same category and class of aircraft to be used. Then you have to have a biennial flight review. Each holder of a private pilot certificate must complete a flight review every 24 calendar months in order to be the PIC of an aircraft with or without passengers. The flight review consists of a minimum of 1 hour of ground training and 1 hour of flight training with an instructor. Proof of flight review is via a logbook endorsement. So those are the things you have to stay current to. One, just be current to fly solo, and then 2, to fly passengers either day or night. Okay, and some of the things that your examiner might ask you around these while you're showing your qualifications, they might ask you if you're current to fly passengers. They might ask you, you know, if you're current as a private pilot or what it means to stay current as a private pilot. So let's say today goes well and you become a private pilot. What sort of things will you have to do in order to stay compliant and legally fly over the years? Well, if they ask you that, you'd say, once I have a private pilot license, I will need to stay current in order to legally fly. I'll also want to stay proficient in whatever aircraft and equipment I am flying with. To stay current, I need to complete a biennial flight review every 24 months, which consists of 1 hour of ground training and 1 hour of flight training. Then, in order to carry passengers during the day, I must have logged 3 takeoffs and 3 landings in the last 90 days. Finally, in order to carry passengers during the night, I have to have logged 3 takeoffs and 3 landings to a full stop. They may then ask you detailed questions around some of this stuff, like, for example, what is the definition of night in this instance when it pertains to currency requirements for passengers? And you might say, well, the FAA has a few definitions of night. For currency to carry passengers, the definition of night is time between an hour after sunset and an hour before sunrise. They may also ask you, do the landings have to be to a full stop if you're in a nosewheel aircraft during the day? And you would say, no, they don't, but they have to be during night. And here's a pro tip on the questions. Give as much detail as you know that you think pertains. You know, don't just talk for hours, but it's okay to have the examiner tell you to shut up and be like, that's enough. So for example, right, if they ask you a scenario like, okay, you want to carry passengers during the day and you've had 3 takeouts and landings, do they, in the last 90 days, do those have to be to a full stop? Instead of just saying no, you can kind of get ahead of the next questions and be like, you know, if you just say no, they're probably going to be like, well, do you have to do it at night or blah, blah, blah. They're going to ask you more questions. So instead of saying no, you can say no. But if I was flying at night or if I was flying in a tailwheel, those 3 landings would have to be to a full stop. You can kind of get ahead, understand where they might go with the next questions, get ahead, and that'll help make things, one, show how much you know and that you're sharp with it all, but also make things go a little smoother and quicker during your oral exam. A couple more subjects that they might ask you while you're, you know, kind of revolving around your qualifications as a pilot. And that one of those is pilot for hire limitations. A private pilot cannot fly a passenger or passengers that pay for more than their pro-rata share of the flight. This means that a passenger cannot pay more than their split on the flying costs. So if there are 2 passengers and a private pilot, and the aircraft rental, fuel, and all operating expenses total $300, that's cheap, right? Then each passenger may not pay more than $100. It's divided 3 ways evenly, right? The private pilot can pay for the whole $300 flight, but the passengers cannot. A commercial license is required to be paid to fly. Costs of a flight are considered fuel, oil, airport expenditures, and rental fees. The only exceptions to this rule are, and I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but passengers are allowed to pay for the flight if a donation is made to a charitable organization for the flight, as long as the organization is described as in FAR 91.146, and the sponsor and pilot comply with the requirements of that FAR. Which we link to here in the course, you can read about it. Or a private pilot may be reimbursed for aircraft operating expenses that are directly related to search and local operations, so search and rescue operations, provided the expenses only involve fuel, oil, airport expenditures, or rental fees, and the operation is sanctioned and under the direct direction and control of a local, state, or federal agency or an organization that conducts search and location operations. Then, the only other exception is a private pilot may, for compensation or hire, act as pilot in command of an aircraft in connection with any business or employment if the flight is only incidental to that business or employment and the aircraft does not carry passengers or property for compensation or hire. So there's a few exceptions where you can kind of get reimbursed, basically, for the costs there, and you don't have to pay for the costs. Your examiner may ask you something like, is it possible to get reimbursed? And you say, there's a few exceptions. You know, I don't know them 100%, but I could find those in the FAR AM for you, and then you could look that up. Or you can say, I know, you know, one of them revolves around, you know, a donation to a charitable organization or search and rescue, or, you know, if it's incidental for your job or something like that. All right, so then there are a few other limitations that exist that you most likely will not be asked about on the FAA written exam, but might, and it's a small chance, but maybe be asked on your check ride. So these are some other limitations, right, that you can fly kind of and get compensated. So there's more than I mentioned, just those 3. So sorry, when I was talking earlier, I said kind of was speaking as if there were only 3, but I was wrong. There's actually several more that I have listed here. Those are the ones I'm not going to go into detail. Just for example, private pilot who is an aircraft salesman or towing a glider, things like that. There are different exceptions. So if you're interested in that, you can go check out the FARs or check out this course. But for this purposes of the course, I'm not going to go in detail here. This is a good thing to just know a few of the exceptions for your check ride and know where to look it up in the FARs if you get asked about it. All right. So what's a possible examiner questions around this? Say your friend wants, all right. So let's say this is your examiner speaking and they say your friend wants you to take them flying and offers to pay for the whole flight. Is this okay? You would say, no, a private pilot cannot pay less than their pro rata share of the flight. This means if you fly one passenger, he, she cannot pay more than half. Otherwise, you would be considered for hire, which requires a commercial certificate. Then they might say, can you as a pilot pay for the entire flight? And you would say, yes, I can pay for it, but just my friend can't pay for it. And they might say, can your friend pay for dinner in a hotel at your destination? And you would say, yes. The pro rata share rule only applies to aircraft rental, fuel, oil, and airport expenditures. It does not include things outside the airport. However, a private pilot cannot use this as a bargaining tool or an exchange for services scheme. I'm pretty sure that was a question I got on my oral exam. So I know for a fact that it's possible to be asked about that. All right, the last thing I'm going to talk about is pilot in command responsibilities that you may be asked during this time. PIC is the person in the aircraft who is ultimately responsible for its operation and safety during all phases of flight. The PIC must have met the legal requirements and be holding the required documentation as mentioned previously. Here are some PIC responsibilities to remember. 1. The PIC is the sole and final authority of the aircraft. PIC of an aircraft is responsible for determining whether the aircraft is in condition for safe flight. If an in-flight emergency requires immediate action, the PIC may deviate from the operating rules of Part 91 to the extent necessary to meet that emergency. And no report of such deviation is required unless the FAA requests one. So those are kind of the rules simplified around the FAR, simplified around PIC. One possible examiner question might be, during an approach to land, you are instructed by ATC to enter a 45 degree into the downwind of a pattern. As you are going to do this, a flock of birds starts flying right towards you at pattern altitude. Are you allowed to deviate from the ATC instructions? And you would say yes. If an in-flight emergency requires immediate action, the PIC may deviate from any rule of 14 CFR Part 91 to the extent required to meet that emergency. And they might ask, how long do you have to submit a report you have to write for deviating from ATC instructions? And you would say you only have to submit a report upon request. If requested, I would submit the report ASAP to the administrator. All right, so this is kind of a general thing of how the start of your oral exam on your check ride would go, right? You're going to be showing your qualifications, your documentation, your IDs, and then they're going to ask you situational-based questions around the knowledge that surrounds these things, right? The knowledge that surrounds your student pilot certificate, your medical certificate, you know, change of address, enforcement of these documents, minimum flight experience in your logbook as you show them your logbook, currency requirements, you know, continue to fly. And one thing I want to mention again there, it's important to, I briefly mentioned it, but when you talk about currency, to also mention the difference between currency and proficiency. That could be another question they might ask you. They might say, all right, let's say you're current to fly, but the aircraft you're flying in has a glass cockpit and you've never flown in a glass cockpit, you know, should you fly? And there's a difference between current and proficient. You might be current to fly in that category, class, and type of aircraft, but it has new bells and whistles in it, so you're not proficient in that specific aircraft, so you wouldn't fly as a personal minimum, you know, something like that. So that's a good one. I think I was asked that on mine, or maybe another student was who told us about that. I'm not sure. Currency, pilot for hire limitations that we talked about, and pilot in command responsibilities, all things that could be asked during this time in the oral exam. Remember, that's how this is going to go. They're going to have you prove things, have you show you that you can do things, and then they're going to ask situation-based questions around those things. So hopefully this was enlightening for you guys and helped try to add these situational-based questions in here where I can, you know, these questions that you might actually get during your oral exam. So for next week, that's it for today's episode. But next week, we're going to talk about proving, you know, the aircraft qualification. So proving that the aircraft is airworthy and what possible oral exam questions you might get while you do that. What goes into doing that? What's all the documentation and the things you have to show to prove that your aircraft is airworthy, the knowledge you have to remember to do that? That's going to be next week. Next week's episode should be a good one. Thank you all for listening. Remember, please share the GoFundMe. Let's try and raise as much money as we can so we can have a really good scholarship when it comes to that. So, all right, everybody, thank you so much, and I'll see you next week. Hey guys, it's Nick. I want to take a second to speak directly to the student pilots out there. You might be a student pilot that is you know, wondering what to do next, how to get started, or maybe you're looking for the right ground training or flight training, or maybe you've already started ground training or flight training and you're stuck, you're in a rut, and you're looking for a change, something to help get you out of that hurdle. From my own experience in flight training, after 3 years, 5 instructors, and $22,000, and wanting to quit multiple times, and then now, after seeing hundreds and hundreds of student pilots through part-time pilot, I've realized that the number one thing that makes student pilots fail is that they do not have a good fundamental understanding of the ground training when they get to the more advanced flight lessons. Now, who here has seen Top Gun Maverick? Do you remember in the movie when he says, "Don't think, just do"? Now, when I heard this, I was like, oh my goodness, this is brilliant, because this is exactly what you have to be as a pilot. Now, of course, it's not that we're not thinking, but it's that we understand things like weather, aerodynamics, what our instruments are telling us, what ATC is telling us. We have such a good core fundamental understanding of these things that we don't have to think about them. And when we don't have to think about them, we can instinctively feel and fly the aircraft, look out for dangers, and avoid emergency situations. If we do have to think about these things, it's going to put us behind mentally, and we're going to be behind the aircraft. And when you're behind the aircraft mentally, bad things happen. And this happens when you don't have a good understanding of the ground school content. So now, the first 10 to 15 hours of your flight training can go smooth, even if you don't have a good understanding of ground training, right? You can go up for discovery flight, have a blast. You can go up, learn how to take off, learn how to land. You may be even able to solo for the first time, fly a plane for the first time. Everything's great and dandy. But once you get into, you know, bad weather flying, or flying at heavily trafficked airports, or speaking with ATC for Bravo clearance, or cross-country flight planning and flying solo on a cross-country flight, things get a little more advanced. And when this happens and you don't have a good understanding of the ground school concepts, you're gonna hit a wall. You're gonna start to get behind the aircraft. And when this happens, if you have a good flight instructor, they're going to stop you and they're going to say, okay, we need to do one-on-one ground lessons. And now you're going to be paying your flight instructor to not even fly with you, but instead $50, $60, $70 an hour to just teach you the ground school content that you should already know. And the worst part is you're not flying with them. So the flight training that you gained, the currency, the proficiency that you gained, is going to be lost, and you're going to have to redo those lessons. What happens to most student pilots is they continuously hit these mental blocks where they get behind the aircraft, they start making mistakes, and then they catch up with the ground knowledge only to have that happen again. And they start to get in this vicious cycle of having to redo trainings and repay for trainings until it gets to the point where them or their family, they finally say, you know what, this has to stop. We can no longer afford the training costs without any progress, you know, and they end up quitting. Now, so how do we avoid that? Well, here comes part-time pilot. Again, I said I went through my own experience of this, and I realized that most flight training and ground training is not tailored to the modern-day student pilot. And when I say modern-day student pilot, I should say modern-day part-time student pilot, because let's face it, there's a very small percentage of us that can go and dedicate 24/7, 365 to our flight training, or not even miss a beat and be able to pay for flight training without working. So most of us have a full-time job, or maybe a part-time job. We have kids, we have family, we have school, we have all these other responsibilities on top of flight training. And most of these flight trainings and ground trainings are not tailored towards you. And so how is it the part-time pilot tailors to the modern day student pilot? Well, the first way we do that is by keeping ground school interesting. You want to avoid being boring, you want to avoid that burnout. So how we do that is we present our material in multiple ways, and you're actually listening to one of them right now. You can consume our content via this podcast and an audio recording. You can do this while you're running, while you're driving in traffic, again, tailoring to that busy part-time student pilot. Or you can read through our written lessons. You know, I like to read, so for those of you that like to read, you can read through the lessons. You can see the step-by-step examples and the procedures that we have. Or you can look through our study guide and see our diagrams and mnemonic devices, have that visual cue, those visual cues and aids that help further your understanding. Or you can watch our videos.
or you can take our quizzes and practice tests to reinforce what you just learned. And then finally, you can join us live weekly for our live Q&A and our live lessons so you can see in real time these things taught out and these examples done in real time. And then finally, you can utilize our group community, form study groups, get questions answered 24/7. All of this is tailored for the modern day student pilot to keep ground school interesting, keep it from being boring, keep from having that burnout, and to find ways that you can consume the content throughout your busy schedule. And guess what? It works. We've had over 350 student pilots come through, take and pass their FAA exams without a single student failing. That's right. A single student has yet to tell me that they failed either their FAA written or their FAA check ride. So that is just proof in the pudding right there that our concepts, the way we explain things in plain written English, and the way we give you multiple ways to consume this content is working. So if this sounds like something you might be interested in and you want to come join us, we'd love to have you. Just go to www.parttimepilot.com, click on online ground school, and we'll see you inside the online ground school. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week.